Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
For nearly four decades, Jerry Cohen served as counsel to the North Carolina General Assembly, working closely with lawmakers of both parties. During his service, which ended in 2014, he researched and drafted numerous constitutional amendments. Last week, Cohen spoke at an NC Policy Watch Crucial Conversation luncheon about this year's slate of amendments and his numerous concerns about the way they are drafted. News and Views producer Clayton Henkel caught up with Jerry after the luncheon.
Jerry, you're the former special counsel for the North Carolina General Assembly. You have been focused most recently on the six constitutional amendments that will be on the ballot this November. Tell us in general terms what our listeners need to know.
Yes, these six constitutional amendments on the ballot in November is the third largest number ever. 1970, when we had a new constitution, there were seven. And 1914, there were 10 on the ballot, all of which were defeated. And about 30 years ago, there were five, three of which were defeated. So it's not a good track record for the legislature putting a whole pack of amendments on the ballot and getting them passed. But they raise a number of issues, and there's also especially important issues on whether the language the legislature has put on the ballot on two or three of these amendments accurately reflects what the amendments do or don't do. And that's the subject of one of the pieces of litigation that Governor Cooper has filed.
Let's talk a little bit about each of the amendments, and we'll get into that a little bit more. We'll start with the right to hunt and fish. That is something that could just be written as a bill, but obviously they want to attract a certain amount of voters to the polls.
Well, I won't assign motives, but yes, this could have been done with a statute. All of these rights, all of our provisions on hunting and fishing now are all statutes or local bills. This could have been done that way. And like all the other amendments, there's no implementing legislation to tell us what this means. The last 30 years, almost every constitutional amendment has had implementing legislation passed prior to the referendum, 13 of the last 14, in fact. So the voters know what's really happening. This year, none of the five that require legislation has it passed with it. So there's this great unknown. But that's right, the hunting and fishing could have been passed as a statute. We actually, the last time we had a hunting and fishing amendment on the ballot was 1914, and folks I met 40 years ago who actually had followed some of that said that the whole 10 amendments went down to defeat because of opposition to the hunting and fishing amendment. True story.
One is going to change appointment powers, and it doesn't just relate to who Governor Cooper will be able to appoint. It will relate to all future governors. It has opposition from past Republican governors and past Democratic governors. But tell us a little bit about that and what some may think is confusing language.
Well, it starts off by saying to establish a bipartisan board of elections and ethics enforcement. You know, it doesn't really establish it because it's already there. I question whether something is truly bipartisan if one party passes it over the complete objections of the other party, whether it's actually bipartisan at all. But the main thing it does, and you, first of all, you have to get 10 words into the amendment language to find this out. It greatly changes the separation of powers doctrine, reverts it to what it was, depending on your view, to either 1981 or even 1868 in terms of the balance of powers. The legislature certainly has the power to propose a major restructuring to the voters. But what it says on the ballot there, after you wade through this feel-good bipartisan Board of Elections and Ethics Enforcement, is to clarify the appointments power. And then it says, for legislative and judicial appointments, where the actual amendment never mentions judicial appointments. I'm not sure whether there's an error, they changed it, or whether it's just a smokescreen, but that simply is not true. And I think the point of the litigation going on now is not that you shouldn't have it on the ballot, but you should have a ballot question that accurately reflects what the amendment does. I don't think that any court could take something off the ballot because they don't like what the amendment itself says, but it's the ballot question that's at issue, assuming it didn't violate the federal constitution.
There is a special commission that was appointed to write that language for the ballot initiatives. Their role has essentially been gutted in this process, am I right?
Well, yes and no. This commission was set up in the 1983 session after three of the five amendments on the 1982 ballot were defeated, largely because of a complete lack of information or misinformation or whatever. So the legislature decided it wanted to have a group in a public process having ballot summaries. And it did that successfully fit the last 15 amendment cycles. You know, no one went to any of their meetings except me and a couple of people. This time there were like 50 people and lots of cameras. The 2016 session added the power to this commission to write captions on the ballot, which is, think of a title of a chapter in a book. It has a little title or caption. A legislative word for that is a short title. And when the legislature found out that there's some people who were writing accurate captions, for instance, there was a Secretary of State Elaine Marshall set up a process for people to submit captions, and I suggested one that said for the judicial appointment, limit power of governor to fill vacancies in short-term judicial appointments, which is exactly what it does. Or transfer powers from the governor to the General Assembly, which is exactly what it does. Well, that appeared to set off a firestorm with calls that somehow I was an interest group or something, and I was just me sitting at my computer.
But obviously, what this comes down to is letting voters know accurately what these amendments are about. Another one has to deal with the governor's judicial appointment powers, and that's probably something that may be unclear to voters.
That's correct also. It's less egregious than the appointments one, but it also, I think, is not really accurate. The one on the 7% tax cap says reduce income tax rate, but it doesn't actually do that. The current income tax rate is 5.49 or 5.99%. This reduces the maximum to 7%. So if anyone who votes for it thinking that their taxes are going to go down because it says reduce tax rate, that's simply not factual. Now, before a conference committee, the cap was going to be 5%. So it could have reduced people's taxes. I think it was close to that limit. But whatever happened, it's simply inaccurate. It is not true that it will reduce the tax rate. Then it goes on to say, after you've gotten past those three words and are happy, it says to reduce the maximum allowable tax rate. So, I mean, it repeats the same language in the actual wording after giving very misleading header to it. How many people read all the way through anything?
And part of this was, I imagine, because it was very rushed. We didn't have a lot of hearings about this summer. It was a quick session.
Most constitutional amendments, I started working on these when I started the legislature in 1977 and worked on drafting and reviewing probably 25 of them over 37 years. The process of constitutional amendments has taken months in the legislature. For instance, the best process was probably the veto amendment, where we had a Republican House and a Democratic Senate, and they had to work together on coming up with the language and did so over a five-week process with lots of meetings and a conference committee. The 1970 constitutional rewrite passed in the 69 session had a study commission that met for 2 years. Its proceedings fill up three big boxes at the legislature with lots of opportunity for debate and discussion. Here, these six were passed within 5 days of each other. Many of them, the language was rolled out and passed within an hour. If you view the Constitution as an important document, then this was a bizarre process.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention voter ID. That's something that there's not a lot of language to explain what is and what isn't a voter ID.
There is no language explaining what ID will be required, but here's what I think that one is about. In Arkansas or Missouri, their state Supreme Court held a voter ID bill unconstitutional as violating the state constitution. That legislature put an amendment on the ballot specifically authorizing voter ID. Voters passed it. It didn't say photo ID, just voter ID. And I think what this amendment really is intended to do is withdraw from our state court system, and specifically our state Supreme Court, the power to rule on voter ID, whether it in fact adds an additional qualification to voting and thus is unconstitutional. I think that's what this is really all about. And when people say there are 34 states with voter ID, that's true, but some of them, you just can have a paper document. There's only 17 states that require photo ID, and only 8 of them are what's called strict photo ID, which was like our bill was in 2013. So when people say 34 states have this or that, it's really either 17 or 8. So, I mean, what's the need to exaggerate? Why not just say this will be like 8 other states and sending like 34 other states because they've used the word photo. If they didn't have the photo in the amendment, the word photo, they could have said it's like 34 states. And we've tied the word photo to a 20th century technology. People are using biometrics and retinal scans to get into offices. I'm not suggesting we subject voters to that, but we're tying this to a technology in existence right now.
And finally, there may be some people that think, well, if the amendments pass and they're unfavorable, we could just change them later. But changing the Constitution after you've changed it is Not that easy, is it?
It would require a 3/5 vote of both houses of the legislature to change it and another referendum.
In an era in which people do not agree on much, that is a tall task.
That's correct.
I'll just let you close by talking a little bit about people's need to continue to educate themselves about all of these ballot initiatives.
Well, people do need to educate themselves with accurate information. The summaries of the constitutional amendments adopted by this commission and all six amendments will appear in a judicial voter guide mailed to 4.3 million households in late September. People have the opportunity to do this. And the other thing is, when people say these issues poll well, 70% of people support something, well, you know, the polling is on an abstract concept. Do you favor X, Y, or Z? Not on the actual details of legislation and not as a result of a political campaign with pro and con arguments. If you have a poll where you have somebody calling on the phone, do you favor this? Then I don't doubt that 70% of the people say they were in favor of something. But what is it that they are in favor of? Where are the details? You know, the legislature has not adopted implementing legislation for any of these. It's scheduled to convene at noon on November 27th. They haven't stated the reason, but coincidentally, at 11 a.m. on November 27th, the State Board of Elections will certify the results of the constitutional amendment. So I think we know that's what it's about. And the real question is, why haven't they adopted the implementing legislation, the norm for decades? All but one constitutional amendment the last 35 years has had it. 2/3 of it in the last 50 years have had it. Why this sudden departure from the norm? You know, it's not conservative to ignore constitutional norms.
Well, it's certainly a lot to think about heading into the fall elections. Jerry Cohen is the former special counsel for the General Assembly. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you, Clayton.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.